to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Right, hello, welcome to episode 328 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb, and my good pal, Sean Orford, who once again is overseas. How many thousands of miles are we apart? How far is it away?
About five, I think, is the distance. It takes me seven and a half hours to fly here.
So. Blimey. You mean you didn't cycle?
I was thought about it.
Get a gravel bike. That would be a hell of a ride, actually, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you're not kidding.
one in a lifetime thing. But yeah, cool. Not that our listeners will know, but yeah, Sean's away or overseas doing a bit of work. I'm in my office in Birkenhead, but we're talking about nudge theory today. I can't exactly remember why, but I just remember it getting mentioned in a
you were saying that meeting I was in. Someone that you were working with was into the nudging.
Yeah, well, I'm actually I'm setting up another podcast for a client of mine who they're in the energy business, a lot of the work that they do with clients trying to save them money, save them energy. Save us all a little bit is based on nudging, really, because even something might be really obvious thing to do. It could save you money. It can make you healthier, whatever. People don't always do it. They don't always take it because for various reasons. So we'll. I thought it was worthy of an episode.
No, I'm with you, and I think that is very topical from my point of view, because nudging is usually seen as how can we nudge people to do positive things, but I'm interested in how people are nudged into doing negative things, which is the other side of the coin.
Very true, because we're getting nudged in all directions, aren't we? It's not always just about quitting smoking and stuff. Trying to nudge us in everything we do and every day. So, who's to say what is right or wrong? But we'll get onto that, hey. Liveinthepresent.co.uk is our website. All the show notes and links are there. Take a look and do get in touch if there's anything you would like us to talk about in an upcoming show. How are you doing, Sean? How's your last week been over there in Qatar?
It is amazingly busy. Loads to do. What tends to happen is because I come and go here. Whenever I appear, there's always loads of people want me to do things and things need to be done. So it does get very, very busy. And I'm not complaining with that. I mean, it's fun. I enjoy it.
Yeah.
But it is quite busy, a bit crazy.
Wow. Yeah, and you haven't. It's too hot to go out for a little stroll still to take in the city.
Today particularly, because I was thinking about could I go out for a walk in a bit, but it is so humid. It's very, very humid today. And that makes it really wearing when you go out for a walk in the heat. It really does drag the energy out of it.
Is Qatar, is it much of a tourist destination yet, or will it be? Because Dubai is somewhere where people go on holiday now.
And the thing is that Qatar is still developing. That's the thing. And whatever it will be in a few years' time, we have yet to see. But it's kind of developing and evolving and creating its own kind of identity. I think it will be quite different to the other countries around here. It'll have its own qualities. I guess in its defining moment will be when they do the World Cup.
Indeed.
Here.
Yeah, 2022, is it, I think?
2022, yeah. And, of course, all around me, everything's being built at the moment. So there's all the stadia are being built.
Wow.
That kind of stuff. It's all happening. And it's all quite exciting from that point of view. There's so many things happening around here. And each time I come back, there's new roads open and new buildings are up. It's like you can see it sort of happening all around you.
Yeah, well, tying that into what we're talking about today in terms of nudge theory, the industry is in a place like that is kind of popping up and people are being nudged to go there for whatever reason, whether it is tourism like yourself to get it, to do a bit of work. And then, wherever you get millions of people or hundreds of thousands, you're going to have a lot of jobs, aren't you, and a lot of investment. So, nudging people to go to Qatar, it worked for you. What was the nudge? What was it that made you go there?
It was mainly because there was a friend of mine was running things over, and he said, "Can you come and give me a hand?" So I said, "Yeah, okay, there I come."
Yeah, which is well, cool. you keep going back, don't you, fairly regularly. So.
Yeah, and I suspect I'll still be coming here during next year, seeing how it develops from there, really. Mm.
Yeah. What's your definition of nudge theory or nudging in general?
I think that the magic of nudging, and I do say it like magic, is that the idea of a nudge is that you persuade somebody to do something or act in a certain way, but you do it below their awareness, so that if the nudge is good, the person doesn't know they've been nudged. And that works to the benefit of lots of things. So one of the examples that we use is the idea that when you approach a junction in the road, then there are rumble strips that are down, and the rumble strips are there so that the way that they work is that they get closer and closer together as you get to the roundabout or the intersection, and it gives you the sensation that you're speeding up, the bum, 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 bum,
because
it gets quicker and quicker and quicker, and you automatically slow down without even thinking about it.
Yeah.
And that's the magic bit. You do it without thinking.
Yeah, and that works better than a sign, which, you know, I'm quite embedded in the world of road safety at the moment and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And you can have all the signs in the world, can't you? And, people miss them. But, yeah, a physical nudge like that is a good one. But, I mean, in terms of emotional nudging, which is a fascinating field, you know, whether you're talking about political stuff or you're talking about sales and in business, it's a real art form to it, isn't it?
I think that one of our biggest examples of nudging in a political sense is when we had Boris wrote that stuff on the side of the bus that said, you know, if we come out of Europe, we'll be able to spend so many millions of pounds on the NHS, which turned out not actually to be true. But he managed to nudge people. I mean, it's a good example of being able to nudge people into voting for something below their awareness, without them even realizing or questioning why they're being nudged in that direction.
Yeah, you know? But it didn't work on all of us, but enough.
Yeah.
It worked on enough, didn't
enough
it?
Enough people.
To land us where we are. In terms of nudge theory, like, when does a lesson in sales and marketing, when does that become like actual nudge theory, or are the lines quite blurred between the two?
I know. If you think about any advert, it's like my favourite adverts. My favourite advert of all time, in fact, was the Redibrack advert, where there's one child. It's the way the store is built is it's freezing cold. There's a child that goes out into the cold, and they've had their Redibrack so that they've got this internal central heating, and they're glowing like they've just come from a nuclear plant, and they're reactive. And the child next to them, who hasn't had this wonderful food to eat, is looking like some kind of deformed cripple walking along beside. And the message is, the way the body language is set up, because people don't look at it, they just look at the bland image. And the message is, would you do this to your child? Would you be so cruel that you would let your child go out in the freezing cold without having internal? And it's that kind of emotion which is below your awareness that people react to.
Yeah.
Very clever.
It is clever, you know, but then you get subtle ones like that, which, and then you get, for example, cigarette packets now have some, well, very hard-hitting images on the front, and they're not allowed to have a proper logo. They're basically just like black and white boxes with a horrible photo on or near it saying, you know, if you buy this, you'll die. So
that's right, yeah.
So it's a bit more blunt, because I take it is smoking cessation, that world. And I know a little bit because I've got some friends in public health that have been on the front line of that in the last 10, 15, 20 years. Yeah. Nudging was tried for a long time, and then I guess at some point you have to kind of start, instead of nudging and tapping gently, you need to start using a sledgehammer. So when does nudging...
I think that those pictures are a nudge. They may be less kind of covert, but when you look at them, they do have an emotional effect, which may well be beyond your or below your awareness.
Yeah,
you know, I do think that is still a good nudge.
I mean, yeah, well, you work with, or you have worked with people who are trying to quit smoking, or maybe smoking is part of their unhealthy life, which has got, you know, lots of things going on. You know, we all do things we shouldn't, or we know are unhealthy. But why do we cling on to these things, such as smoking, or, you know, eating things that we shouldn't, or...
Very often we're talking about addiction. You know, people are addicted, that physically their bodies have been taught to tolerate a level of whatever the substance is. And when the level of that substance drops in their system, the body's going, give me, I need more, give it to me now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you get that good addictive cycle going on.
Yeah, I mean, because you've already mentioned Brexit, so you've said you've got your bit in that you always like to talk about. Not that I don't like to talk about, but I need to talk about now about my environmental stuff, because I just read a document yesterday which World Council have put out, which is part of their next climate change strategy, which has kind of gone out for thoughts and comments and consultation. And it's really stark, actually, like reading all this stuff. You know, written by a guy that I've got to know quite well, who really knows his numbers and all that kind of stuff. I'm trying to think off the top of my head some of the crazy... But, for example, if we're going to hit our climate change targets on the world, as the 300,000-odd people that live here, we need to electrify all transport by the year 2030. So 11 years from now on the world, every car... Every bus, every train, what all trains are, need to be electric.
Wow.
11 years. And I'm thinking now, as someone who wants to get involved in that process and making sure that happens, because it has to, how we do it, you know, we're forceful with the messaging, but we don't do it to the point where we piss people off, you know, because I can just see what happens, what's going to happen, because I've seen it on a small scale already, trying to influence behaviour around the schools where I am, where Will goes and Jacob, because, you know, you're trying to get people not to drive a few hundred metres every morning, and I'm treated like the enemy. So I'm really fascinated about how we do that on a really large scale on the world.
Any when tips? You say you're treated like the enemy, are people actually rude to you directly?
Well, to be honest, no, they're not actually. A few are that I know, and I know they've got it in for me, and they know what I'm up to and what I want. But that part of the project we did was to build a little community. So there was like 30 of us parents that all worked on the air quality testing, because I wanted to head off that angry, small percentage of angry people that are not up for change at all. And anyway, it worked, to be honest, but still, I need to take people with me, or we all need to go along on this journey together.
It
doesn't just have to be environmental stuff. Yeah, there's all sorts of stuff going on in the world that we need to fix, and we need to take people with us. So, but at the same time, it's urgent. So at what point does a nudge need to become a shove?
Or become a shout.
No, I'm
with you. And I think that maybe... That's what Mother Nature is doing. Mother Nature is giving us a nudge, saying, look, you know, if you look at the way the weather's changing, that kind of thing, that Mother Nature's saying, you know, you need to change this, guys. Come on, you know, you need to wake up. And it's like, how loud does that message have to get before we do start to respond?
Or how loud does it have to get with work that you do with people that have, you know, serious emotional issues and stuff going on? How loud does that have to get?
Well, to me, the issue is... that the only reasons people change is either through pain or awareness. Either they hurt so much, they've got no choice, they've got to change, or they have that awareness, light bulb moment, where they think, well, I need to change this. And the options, because the option is pain, which is what most people go for, that can be quite a difficult process for lots of people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Blimey. What was I going to say? I mean, I'm thinking about this stuff all the time. We've got this little bike event on Sunday. You know, if there's any world listeners listening to this as it goes out, Sunday the 22nd, the Brimstage Hall, the Levy Hume Summer Cycle is on the go. So I'll put a link in the show notes. So, yeah, but the messaging for that, in terms of how we've advertised it and got press releases out, you know, it's been that it's a nice, quiet, gentle family event. You know, don't come up expecting huge razzmatazz. I want people to come and expect just some peace and quiet, you know, in a normally hidden part of the world. So yeah, and I've tried to filter that through as a designer into the posters, you know, and the website and all the little films we've put out. So yeah, I'm fascinated about how, as a designer, I can nudge people gently. But yeah, I did my dissertation as well on political advertising in the kind of Second World War, like the adverts that we used to kind of get people on side for the action that was needed. So yeah, graphic design has quite a role to play there as well.
Yeah. So how's it looking? I mean, you've been setting it up. Does it look like it's going to float?
It does. Yeah, I feel like we've done as much as we can in terms of with the kind of fairly limited resources that we had available, the budget. Yeah. So we're all on track in terms of, you know, all the health and safety stuff, and we've got volunteer marshals. So it's just that we don't really know whether 10 people are going to show up or 1,000. So hopefully somewhere in between it'll be good. But yeah, the weather looks all right, and it's the first little gig for the CIC that set up.
Yeah.
So just hopefully, at the very least, we might get some nice photos out of it, and you know, some smiles on faces and all that stuff. So
I'm sad that I won't be there, really.
Yeah, gutted, man.
To be there.
Gutted.
All happening.
Yeah. But yeah, at the same time, I don't want to rethink the company I've set up to be this company that just does happy, smiley family bike rides, you know, on quiet, closed little roads, because we've got some big work to do. But it's a good little test case for us to see how we are organising an event like this. And Tanya, my colleague, and the two Andes who've got another little company have been really quite a good little team, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm nervous, man. It's a lot of work. A lot of work goes into something like this, which I sort of knew but didn't realise. But I'm the kind of person that needs a nudge in terms of deadline. So I know there's loads. Yeah, right. There's a lot that I still need to do personally on my job list. and I'm just ticking down. It's like my brain is waiting for that real sense of urgency so that I do certain things. Because that's the type of person I am, and that's the type of nudge that I need quite often. Because
so were you like that when you were at uni?
Yeah, big time. Yeah. I mean, I got two one at uni, and I did what I needed to. But I remember there was one project in particular that the coursework, and I was like, I hadn't done anything the day before the presentation, and I was just pretty chilled out about it. And that was the only module that I failed, because I just left it way too late in that particular instance. But yeah, we're all different, aren't we? That's the where the complicated thing arises, because a nudge for one person could be successful, and a nudge, the same nudge for another person, will have no impact. So I guess is that where repetition comes into play as well?
Yeah, sometimes. And if something is repetitious, that in itself can start to appear below awareness. In the sense of, it's like if you've got a song in your head, you know, if you sing it long enough, it just gets stuck in your head without you realizing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that kind of, what they call in psychotherapy, they talk about the broken record. You know, you keep saying the same thing over and over and over and over again until finally it starts to work.
You just got to keep going. Yeah, I'm thinking about it as well, like as a parent, nudging with kids, and I've got a 4 and a 7-year-old. There comes a point in there, both of them, I mean, they all have different characters, but when they're really young, like, or a toddler, you can nudge kids far more easily. You can kind of semi-blackmail them, and you can just kind of, by using language or a certain type of thing. Like, for example, if I want the boys to go upstairs, this one still works, actually. So if it's like time to go up, bedtime, that's enough telly, whatever, or mucking around. Quite often when I say, right, boys, up you go, let's go, they'll like ignore me completely. But then if I say, boys, first one to the top of the stairs wins a prize, boom, they're both up and they leg it. Yeah. You know, and obviously one will end up crying because usually Jacob, because he's the smallest, because William's beating him. So, but then I whisper in his ear as he's going up, don't worry, I was just joking, the first one to the top is a jump. So Will's happy because he's the top and he won, and Jacob's happy because I've nudged him. So, but yeah, nudging with kids is like a constant battle because they're developing, aren't they? And they learn every time that I nudge them. You know, there's
but
not...
it's much easier to be nudging kids than to, you know, creating World War III.
Yeah. So it's fascinating though, yeah, but you know, obviously they learn through, yeah, at some point that's not going to work, that get to the top of the stairs and you win a prize because they haven't cottoned on yet that there's no prize.
you mean person.
I know, oh yeah, yeah. So I'll need to think of something else because their minds will develop, won't they, or they are developing and they'll, yeah, things will stop working, certain nudges will stop working on people, so it's a constant kind of battle and a learning game, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And they're both, you're learning, but they're learning too.
Yeah.
It works both ways, doesn't it?
It's when you're working with clients and let's say you're nudging a certain way and it's not working and you're not getting the results that you want and they want,
It depends on the nature of the contract and the service, but very often what you have to do, you have to say to the person, okay, we need to stop doing this now and you need to come back when you're ready. Because I mean, sometimes what I'll do is I'll say to people, okay, I need you to do this, or you need you to do this for us to make the next step, and they don't do it and they don't do it and they don't do it, and in the end it has to be okay, that you go away, and when you're ready to do that, you do it, and then we'll do the next bit.
Okay.
Yeah, and be like that, yeah.
And you sometimes kind of reach breaking point, and you'll crack out the cigarette packet style method of like really kind of shining a light on.
Yeah, yeah. I think it depends on the person and what's going on, but sometimes you do have to be brutally honest with somebody.
Yeah,
and they might find that a little bit difficult, but that is the nature of the beast.
Yeah, and it does that tend to, like, after the initial shock and maybe anger, do they come back and say thanks for doing that, or whew, I needed that?
Yeah, very often that's the case. You know, that's the way it goes, and that's good. That's as it should be.
Yeah.
But there are times when you have to allow people to come to things in their own way, and you can't nudge or confront. You have to allow them to go and experience life and maybe come back. I've had people come back like a couple of years later and say, okay, I get what you mean now. I'm ready to do the next bit. You know,
cool.
That kind of thing.
So it can take a while for that to kind of, that message to get through, or the kind of...
Yeah,
and I
think if overall for us as human beings, if you look at the nudging that's going on with nature and the environment, it is a case of how long is it going to be before we respond to the nudge? And how loud does that message have to get before we respond to it? Because we're not responding at the moment.
We're not. We're
certainly not responding quick enough. Certainly.
Yeah, nowhere near. I mean, I guess... Yeah. The issue with that is that by the time the kind of the way that the physics of it all works is that the nudges that we get from Mother Nature, whether it's, you know, extreme weather events or, you know, even flooding or sea levels rising, you know, a nudge like a meter sea level rise is too late because by the time that's kicked in, it'll be too late for us to make the changes needed. So I think that's why groups like Extinction Rebellion have formed, you know, because people are just realising that this kind of softly, softly write your nice letter to your councillor or your MP isn't going to work. And they kind of, you know, I've watched quite a lot of the founders of Extinction Rebellion. They've done a lot of research into kind of how you make big changes in society, you know, looking at research from, you know, rights, you know, abuses of rights for various things around the world. So it's quite fascinating, to be honest, how that's formed. But yeah, you know, no more Mr. Nice Guy. It's like, I think it is October the 7th, the next rebellion starts in London. And the aim is to bring the city to a standstill for as long as it takes, you know. You know, whether that be a week, 2 weeks, or months and months, so it's going to be quite interesting to see how that goes down.
Yeah.
I'm sure the police are kind of going to be a bit more prepared this time. Hopefully it won't get too messy and ugly, but obviously that's all at the same time happening while our democracy is under a massive strain as well. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I don't think it's a coincidence that they're happening at the same time, to be honest. I think they're all weird nudges from nature, you know, to say that things are a bit broken and we've got to fix them.
Well, one of the things that that bothers me with the way that we've lurched towards the right in this country is, and because when you get that lurch, you get the intolerance factor comes in. It's easy then to get repressive, so that and I guess you see it going on in Hong Kong, where it's like, at what point, you know, hopefully not, but at what point did the Chinese army step in and start to do stuff? And how long would the Chinese hierarchy allow the Hong Kong people to carry on in the way that they are?
I know.
Without becoming repressive. So, and that's a bit scary to look at, all that stuff.
Yeah, big time. But it is, man. But thankfully we've got, I mean, obviously we're on the side of the citizens of Hong Kong, but I think they've realised that there's so many of them, and there a lot of them probably are willing to put themselves in harm's way, at some point, they'll have to compromise and back down, and hopefully things will be okay. But yeah, man, there's probably going to be bloodshed and all sorts of crazy stuff going on, isn't there?
Yeah, not good.
Have you got a resource of the week for us, Sean?
I've put up the nudge book on the sheet. I think that the nudge book is a book that I've used quite a lot in different organisations, and it is a good book. It's worth a read.
Marvellous. I'm going to give a nudge for people to check out one of our listeners, Mike. Used to be going to the name of Arabic Mike on YouTube, but now his channel is called Mike Still. So I'll link to it, but Mike's a long time listener of this show, been very supportive, and he's become quite a big deal on YouTube. I think he's got 250,000 subscribers.
Wow.
Gets a lot of views for his episodes, sometimes an insane amount. But he does some really interesting stuff. He did a 55-hour fast, which, you know, there's a bit of a disclaimer at the start, obviously, but it's something he goes through every now and again, where he's just on water for 55 hours. I think he's in Japan at the moment. He travels about a lot. It's like a travel vlog he's got. But yeah, man, it's just cool watching him go around. It's been really cool watching his channel grow and his online presence grow as well. So check out Mike.
I will do. That's good.
Yeah, okay, cool. I think we've got one more week, haven't we, next week, where you're away. We'll need to Skype
I'm
it in.
Away, and then I'm back again after that. When I come back, I will have a new kitchen with a new cooker, and I can make bread.
You've all that. On the go, haven't you? Marvellous. Okay, well, you have a good week. Don't be too busy, Sean.
I will. I should look after myself. You look after yourself too.
You too. All right, thanks, mate. You take it easy.
Okay, you take care.
Bye, everyone.
See you soon.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.